Hello, this is Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast, recording from near the Hate in San Francisco. Today we have only one poet besides me, but we have a special treat today. We have Judith Barnett, who works at the Beat Museum in the North Beach area of San Francisco near City Lights Bookstore, where the Beats came from. The URL of the Beat Museum is www.thebeatmuseum.org. I met her at the open mics that they hold there regularly. I have one proverb to state as we approach the end of this intro that I hope you consider worthy. Why do we fight battles in Iraq where more people die when we could fight battles on cancer right in the U.S. and fewer people would die? As you might notice in Judith's poetry, she talks about her fight with cancer. Let's hope she wins. I remember reading a book when I was about 10 years old about cancer called Death Be Not Proud by John Gunther. I recommend it. Judith has a book coming out hopefully in February. It is called Critics and Other Lovers. Please buy it if you can. You will probably be able to buy it through the Beat Museum. All URLs I will put in the show notes on the Mystic Babylon website. The poetry segment will start shortly. Hello, this is John again. This first poem, Bric-a-Brac, describes the built-up wickedness of society being much like brick and mortar itself, which makes it difficult to recreate a compassionate society without tearing down the foundation. The title of the poem is spelt like brick and mortar as in brick, thusly Bric-a-Brac. Here is the poem. The bricklayer must sing, and the building he builds should house kind-hearted gentry, not a machine. The remnants of a foundation from the past should not be shrouded in mystery where previous shadows of gloom of predestination are cast. We can't always live with a broken-down spirit in a broken-down house where our stepfather Inquisition has exiled us for trying to fortify our spirits and reinforce what we espouse. The reactionary inappropriateness of the footloose thrower of bricks sometimes delves into the meaning and origin of the elusive built-up bigotry that prevents a man from building a castle and instead must dig a ditch. The keystone should extend its support to the strengthening and building of the pier so as to hold back the landslides which tear down the courthouse and cause the weak to experience fears. We have to trick the shams who testify against themselves so their building will fall down in shambles all because of themselves. This second poem, The Cat, is just a silly poem I wrote about a hippie I knew in the 70s. Here is the poem. I knew a man who was a cat. He rode a Harley and was very fat. He lived in Babylon, where you must be begat. He had a Chinese father from Siam. His favorite food was ham. Ever since he left Siam, he was on the lam. This cat also refused to fight in Vietnam, but asked if he liked Angkor Wat. He said he liked it because it rhymed with cat. He said of war he preferred peace, but he wasn't against eating some tasty meats. The man who was this cat that I knew was a very jealous cat, too. He would sing a song of meow to Sally, who was his girlfriend in Tin Pan Alley. He banged so loud on his pans in that alley that he attracted the attention of Lieutenant Calley. It was then that he became afraid that he would take his girlfriend to ballet. He felt so proud that Chairman Mao thought he was the cat's meow. This last poem, It's Greek to Me, echoes the idea that the guilty speak a foreign tongue that in this case is Grecian. Here's the poem. The devil is a Grecian priest. His mind is alive, but his soul is deceased. He is not tame. He is an arson and a beast, and a confessor, to say the least. He lit my soul on fire. His presence even disturbed the funeral pyre. He spoke the devil's word, but everything he said was true. The only thing it was in Grecian, and it was all construed. When the priest left, all you could see was his heels. He disappeared quickly, so you couldn't tell how he feels. His face was hooded, and his figure into the night did rapidly steal. Everything he said, especially when he talked Grecian, was foreign to me. Even with all he had to say, I could not totally agree. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank you, John, for inviting me to be on your podcast. As you said, I am Judith Barnett. I'm a volunteer at the Beat Museum. I'm there frequently, and that's where we met, at the poetry reading there, which happens every couple of weeks. So I'm going to read some poems from a collection that I have coming out the first quarter of next year called Critics and Other Lovers. The critic in my head speaks to me with the voices of old lovers, burns black pits of silence in my soul. 7 years of song caught in a tight throat, never spoken above a whisper. Boxes of my history hidden under the bed, cowering in fear of the word trite. If you read my story, will you think me a paint-by-number Rembrandt, a karaoke Mozart, Jaeger with a paper plane? Remember, it would be very quiet in the forest if only the nightingales sang. I have an unfriendly heart, alien, aloof, chilly, detached. My body will friend you quickly and get cozy and squishy. My mind will adore the deep conversation, and my voice will regale you with exploits. But I have an unfriendly heart. If you get too near, it will nip your head off and feed it to the ravenous wolves of love. This poem is always right. How cold it must be to be always sane, never wrong, looking down the slope of your nose at those of us who dare to cry, to laugh, to feel, to go crazy. How dry it must be to never know tears when love is forever wet and warm. Do you know that being sane in an insane world makes you the misfit? This poem is The Beast. You started out a single cell. You grew into a ravenous beast, a tiny beast, no larger than a wine grape, but still a beast, malignant and ugly. One sunny August day, you showed your malformed face to a cold machine, derailing my dreams. My future shrank from infinity to mere moments. I won't sit on my porch and rock great-grandchildren, or write sequels to my novels, or rest again in my lover's arms. Those dreams are dead as I will be when you are done with your gnawing. Whatever I do, I must do now, for you have killed even the idea of someday. This poem is Where Are You? Light years ago, we met and, touching, soared across the sky, merging, exploding, smearing light across a universe, galaxies born in the wake of our love. Where are you? I have loved you so much for so long, my heartbeat speaks your name. I feel you in the night, ghostly fingers touching my face. I open my eyes. Where are you? Found in the night, quicksilver singer, she moves so well, weaves magic with her flood of words, drowns me in metaphor, swimming upstream in song from the shoals of my silence. I pray for pause. Be still, quick one, you wear me out. Battered by rocks of memory, I cut my feet on sands of regret. This river is a rain of tears, not the thaw of my heart. Patterns, a kaleidoscope of faces others see. Torn, my heart a battlefield, of loss, of indecision, of guilt, of grief. Daughter, wife, mother, sister, friend, lover, lost in the chaos of being a different person to different people. Searching, longing for a rest from seeking, fatigued, weary of this struggle, alone, a soul in solitude, rejected by its peers. No one knows me. They only know what they want of me. Giving, consumed by the need to comfort, drained, receiving little in return that is nourishing to me. Apprehensive, afraid to show my true countenance, remaining patterns. This poem is In the Dark. Lips meet in the night, warm, moist breath, tongues entangled. You are slippery in the dark. Soft, satin, smooth skin, taut across the framework of my universe. You are slippery in the dark. Rain pours from the sky, bodies entwined. You like it wet. You are slippery in the dark. Morning slides by, tears on my cheeks. I cry alone. You are slippery in the dark. Blue skies, cold nights, warm hearts. Wanting to hold on, but understanding why I must let go. Back to the real world, but tucking away the few days of joy with the same tenderness that you tucked me in. The years that separate us are only time that I have lived and you have not. Time that has taught me to be a friend when friendship is all I can have. I will not speak of love or forever, but know this. Sometimes I only want you to hold me, and your arms are enough. The leaves will fall, winter will come, spring will follow. Time flows like a river fed by the thaw of my heart. When the current takes you away, I'll stand on the banks that overflow with the rain, not my tears. This poem is called A Cyberpunk Looks at 40, with apologies to Jimmy Buffett. They call me computer genius, digital guru, and I can make those bytes do loops and logical decisions. My basement is a circuit board graveyard. The spiders have discovered modems. Unfortunately, so have the yuppies. The shining promise of the net has become a gooey web of status email addresses and kiddie porn. I hate computers. Stupid inanimate boxes are either everyone's savior or everyone's goat. Push the buttons, click the mount, reboot, kill some trees for the laser printer, call the programmer at 3 a.m. Why pay for virtual reality when real reality is bad enough? This poem is Ode to a Shopping Mall. I am a child of the woods. I live with the trees and the flowers. I am at home with snakes and spiders. But on occasion, civilization calls, so I make a trip to the mall. I go in search of a watch to tick away the moments of my life, although time to me is not of the essence. I consider a Rolex and hear the laughter of friends who know me not to be a seeker of status. I buy instead a Timex to replace my Kmart Blue Light Special that drowned in the hot tub. I peer into the window of the tobacco shop, amazed at plates of porcelain spaghetti with forks suspended in midair, blue and gray chess pieces still fighting that war. No one in the shop buys tobacco. What happens to the palm trees when they are as tall as the roof? Are they growing toward certain death, shading the neon and plastic? I sit beside the Grecian urn and write this ode, leaning against the Doric column for simple support. I long to ask the decorator a question. Can you say tacky? I eat a lunch of bad Chinese food. Perhaps I should have chosen another country. A taco, a gyro, Roman delight, a Swiss pretzel. What an image that brings to mind. No American food in this most American of places. Oh, wait, a Chick-fil-A, but never on Sunday. A family sits beside me, father and two sons, a bespectacled trio, The father walks away. A son becomes a man, flirting with me. Practicing a smile he will soon use on someone's unsuspecting daughter. I like your hair, he says. It's the same color as my dog. An Irish setter, no doubt. In the realms of poetry, it's often considered trite to write love poems. But when life hands you a broken heart and a serious illness in the same week, getting a good poem out of it is about the best you can expect. So this one is called This Love. What is it, really, this love? How can it be that the person whose very existence I was unaware of 5 months ago is as necessary to me today as the air I breathe? Vows have been taken by lovers for centuries that speak of dichotomies, better or worse, richer or poor, sickness or health. But at the first sign of weakness, the slightest hint of worse, my tendency is to run away as fast as I can, and the crowd cheers me on. What of this love, this blossoming potential, this kindling flame? Should I pour the water of disdain over it and put it out at the first sign of trouble? What, then, does it really mean for me to love? If I can, with flagrant disregard, ignore the overwhelming needs of the loved one for my own self-interest, does this not make me shallow and unworthy to speak the word? This is not a passing fling, a childish crush, a middle-aged move of desperate melodrama. This is the most powerful emotion I've ever experienced. How can I leave it unfulfilled? How bleak a future I see without this heart to hold. I have everything to gain from staying and nothing to lose but my fear. I have everything to lose from running and nothing to gain but my cave. The infinite, crawling, empty loneliness of a tiny room where I can spend the rest of my life staring at the face of regret. To spend the years in silence with nothing but the sound ringing in my head. What if? What if? Love, if it is worth having, must be worth the struggle to preserve it. Having someone hold you in your joy must equate to your willingness to hold them when they cry, or even while they die. If at some distant bedside we share those final moments, let us go to them knowing that we did the best we could, that we walked through hell holding hands and emerged the stronger for it, that above all, when it mattered, we loved each other.
Thank you, Judith Barnett. Excuse me if in the intro my pronunciation was a little off. This ends Mystic Babylon Open Mic Poetry Podcast. I hope you can come back and visit again. Thank you again.
This podcast
is a member of the Association of Poetry Podcasting at poetrypodcasting.org.